First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Duval County is the latest hotspot in this pandemic that just won't end. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this Tuesday morning, why Jacksonville is now ground zero in Florida's COVID resurgence. We're going to talk about it this morning, and we want your calls. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, author Craig Pittman, his book about Florida. But first this morning, the latest numbers on the pandemic and information you need to know right now. Jacksonville and surrounding counties have emerged this week as Florida's latest hotspot in the battle against COVID-19. Positive cases in our area have doubled in the last week. Hospitals are once again filling up and in some cases canceling elective surgeries. That is never a good sign. Now, among Florida's major metropolitan counties, Duval County now has the worst positivity rate for cases, the worst vaccination percentage, and the highest number of infections per 100,000 residents. Meanwhile, the Delta variant of the virus is just barreling through the area, and it's causing a majority of these cases. And we can't stress this enough, folks. Virtually everyone coming into hospitals now who is seriously ill with COVID is unvaccinated. City officials, Mayor Lenny Curry, are all urging vaccinations right now. So is Dr. Jennifer Cowart, MD. She's a hospitalist physician in Jacksonville and part of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. They're going to be having a town hall soon, but right now we've got a preview as Dr. Cowart joins us on the phone. Doctor, good to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
And as we talk about the resurgence of COVID and the importance of vaccinations, call us up, folks, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So, Dr. Cowart, all throughout this pandemic, you've been urging masking, distancing, hand washing, and vaccinations as soon as the vaccines became available. It is so frustrating right now for everyone who has gotten the vaccine to see this high percentage of people who have basically been brainwashed by disinformation and will not get vaccinated. So what's your message this morning as we see this resurgence once again striking this community?
Yeah, thank you. It is very frustrating for those of us that work in medicine and, you know, working in the hospital and seeing people coming in so sick and watching them suffer, watching their families suffer, unable to be at their bedside, having to communicate via Zoom or Skype. And so I see a couple of ways to talk to people. I ask all of my patients if they've had a vaccine. I ask them if they have any questions for me that I can answer while they're in the hospital. And a couple things have come up. One, you know, it was a group of people who are concerned about the vaccine. They have questions about it. They are concerned about their own health. Those are people that I take the time to listen to. I advise them to talk to their own doctor who would know their health record very well. And so if there's anything in their health history that their doctor feels concerned about in terms of vaccination, their doctor would be able to answer those questions. But most of the time, we're able to answer those questions, look at that health history, and we would still recommend vaccination. So those folks who are out having questions, they're not sure about it, if it's for them, I would say, please talk to your doctor, get that information from them. That also goes for our kids. You know, the kids that are 12 and up now are able to get vaccinated. And I know that parents have questions. And so, again, I would say my pediatric colleagues are very in tune with what the risks and benefits of the vaccine are and the risks and benefits of getting COVID in that age range. And so I would say that if you're worried about your kid, I would definitely talk to their pediatrician. There's some folks that they're more ideologically, you know, opposed to the vaccine. They tell me they've done their research. I try to just leave the door open for them and say, you know, if you have any questions down the road, I'm here for you. I don't want to turn anybody away or turn them off to coming to, you know, somebody with medical training, scientific training to ask those questions. If it's a question I don't know the answer to, I'm happy to look it up with them. We can look at those questions together. So I would say that, you know, I try to keep a really open, positive attitude and ask those questions openly. But I can't tell you, Melissa, how frustrating it is to see people getting sick, coming to hospital. You know, some of these folks are so short of breath, they can't get up to the bathroom by themselves. You know, they need help to do basic things, and it's so terrible to watch.
And let's be clear, Dr. Cowart, if you're coming into the hospital with COVID, it's because you can't breathe. It's so serious that you need to be hooked up to oxygen for the most part. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Our admission criteria at my hospital involve whether or not you have life-threatening electrolyte abnormalities on your lab work or whether you can't breathe and you have low oxygen. If you feel terrible but your oxygen looks fine, then we're going to be turning you back to the community and advising you to go home and isolate in place and drink fluids and follow up with your doctor, get monoclonal antibody infusions set up if you qualify for those. So the only reason that people are coming into the hospital right now is because their oxygen levels are dropping or they have other life-threatening emergencies related to COVID. So these people feel sick. They feel terrible. They're needing a lot of resources. They're needing that oxygen coming in. I would also say that a lot of them are staying in the hospital a long time, weeks at a time in some cases. And so, you know, these people are sick for a long time and it makes the regular flow of the hospital really slow down and get sluggish to where when you come into the emergency room with your kidney stone or, you know, something else that's painful and you need help, you're going to have to wait longer because we're so full with these sick COVID patients that also need our help. And so everyone's having to wait longer because the hospital systems are being overwhelmed by this surge.
Right. Elective surgeries are being canceled again, once again, because the ICUs are filling up with COVID patients in our area. We'll go to your calls in a moment, 549-2937. You know, Dr. Cowart, I heard from a nurse on Twitter this week, and her husband is a doctor, she says, and she reached out to me about a family that she saw in the hospital where she works. Here's what she said to me. A 49-year-old father of two was placed on a ventilator yesterday. The MD told his wife to say her goodbyes as he is not expected to make it. Just 2 weeks ago, they were dancing at my friend's cafe. Last week, their 23-year-old daughter was in the hospital with COVID pneumonia. This family was afraid of the vaccine. So when you hear stories like that, you just want to bang your head against a wall. That people are choosing not to vaccinate because they falsely believe the vaccines aren't effective, or they believe that the vaccines are some attempt to by the government to control them, or they believe all manner of ridiculous things that aren't true. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, the double combination shot, are 98% and 95% effective in preventing serious illness and death from COVID-19. So, doctor, if you could, what types of patients have you seen in the hospital with stories like this that maybe you could share with our listeners right now so that they understand that people are coming into the hospital that aren't vaccinated, and it's only when they're being hooked up to a ventilator that they realize that they should have gotten the vaccine?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people have fallen into two traps sometimes at the same time. Like you said, there's the trap of misinformation about the vaccine, people reading poor information on the internet, or they're getting this misinformation from people they trust close to them. And so they falsely believe that the vaccine is not safe or it's not effective. My favorite is perhaps that it has a 5G chip inside, although I have not seen my internet get any better since I got vaccinated. So that's trap one. Trap two is, COVID isn't that bad. So that's the other trap that people fall into. They reassure themselves that COVID isn't that bad. You know, they only focus on things like mortality rate, and they think, oh, it's just the flu. It's not any big deal. And so when you combine those two traps, people who have misinformation about the vaccine, fear the vaccine, and they think COVID itself isn't that bad, I think that's where we see a rise in people who are not only unvaccinated, but they aren't taking other precautions as well. You know, they're not wearing their masks anymore. They say, great, there's no mask mandate, so I'll take it off. COVID's gone away. It's not any big deal. I don't need that vaccine because COVID's just the flu, et cetera. And so, you know, I was reading the story the other day of a young man in Georgia who's getting a double lung transplant because of the damage that COVID did to his lungs. And he was a young, healthy person before he got COVID. Now here he is going to be a lung transplant patient. And his message was very clear, and it was get the vaccine. So I have seen families come into the hospital. I think that's one of the most devastating things is seeing the same names on the list and knowing that they're related to each other and that the whole family's sick at the same time. And, you know, it's heartbreaking when one person's in the hospital unnecessarily, but when more than one person from the family's in the hospital at the same time, it's just a tragedy compounded. And I feel for that family and I weep for them. And I just want all of their family members to know what's happening and to get vaccinated to try to protect everyone.
Let's go to your calls now, 549-2937. Give us a call. Eric in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. But 2 points, if you don't mind. One is, when I was a kid growing up, there was a few crazy people floating around. You know, every once in a while, there'd be someone who said that Jesus was going to come back tomorrow or next week or so on a certain date. Or there were people who thought there were aliens, you know, Art Bell and all that. But there were so few of them. Now, like, 1 in 3 people are nuts in America. And I really honestly believe that we should shut down social media until the virus is over. I mean, some of the most preposterous things are in mainstream thinking, have gotten into mainstream thinking. And I mean, what else has changed so dramatically other than, you know, internet access and the way in which people communicate with each other? I think social media is making people crazy.
You know, Eric, I so share your frustration with the disinformation that's online and on social media, particularly Facebook. They've determined that literally about 12 people on Facebook are responsible for the vast majority of disinformation about COVID vaccinations. You know, we can't deplatform the social media giants, but what we can do is try to educate people. And that is not easy to do because, as you point out, Eric, so many people are going down this rabbit hole of just bunk. Facebook is pushing back Dr. Cowart and saying that they are cracking down on disinformation on their website. They haven't, I don't think, done nearly what they need to do. Fox News has been another bad actor in this whole pandemic. Their hosts are all required to show vaccine passports to come to work or submit to daily testing. Yet until yesterday, the highest rated hosts on Fox have been pushing vaccine skepticism and vaccine disinformation. Something must have happened yesterday because last night Sean Hannity changed course and started promoting vaccinations. A few of the other hosts have done the same. But those are the two biggest players, frankly, in the media space, Doctor, that have been prolonging this pandemic by encouraging vaccine skepticism and promoting vaccine disinformation.
It's just really disheartening, and I wish I had easy answers, but I don't because it's a big problem. I will say that I will take small wins where I can get them. So, you know, I was delighted to see Sean Hannity yesterday encouraging vaccination. I think that's a positive step. And, you know, there's vaccine skepticism on both sides of the aisle. But I would love to see more of our elected officials, our Democratic, Republican, and NPA elected officials, you know, really stepping forward and promoting vaccination. So I was delighted yesterday to see State Rep Jason Fisher using social media for good and posting on Twitter that he and his family were receiving their first doses of vaccine. So I think I will just have to say I will take small wins where they come. But we have to work together. You know, COVID really doesn't care what your voting habits are, your ideology. You will get just as sick whether you're a Democrat or Republican. And so, the vaccine was, developed and created under a Republican administration, and it's now being, promoted and delivered by a Democratic administration. So you could say this is a bipartisan vaccine, and, I just want to see everybody get vaccinated and be safe from this thing because, suffering is suffering regardless of your political beliefs. And I hate to see anybody suffer needlessly.
Trey in Jacksonville. Hi, Trey. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Trey.
I just wanted to mainly make a comment about what happens if, we're talking about the variant that we have right now and the one that before, the alpha one before. What happens if one comes along that is really attacking young people or even children? We're asking our children to go back to school already without masks. So, if people are not going to get vaccinated, that's going to be the outcome. It's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. Thank you, Trey. By the way, the American Academy of Pediatrics this week has new guidance out. They want masks in schools this fall for everyone over the age of 2. As yet, schools aren't going to be mandating that, at least not right now. That might change. But Dr. Cowart, what about the next variant? If this thing keeps going on and on and on, eventually the vaccines are going to decrease in effectiveness.
Yes, I think that's absolutely the case that we're worried about here. So already this Delta variant, I'm being reminded by a colleague, it's already 200% more transmissible than the original virus. You know, viruses are mutating things, and when a mutation is successful at spreading that virus, then it can spread more easily. So the Delta variant we're dealing with now is already more transmissible than the original COVID virus we were dealing with, a year ago. So the risk of this Delta variant churning through more of our population and our unvaccinated population, including our kids like mine, who are too young currently to be vaccinated, the more risk that we get worse variants down the road. So a more infectious variant or a more virulent variant, one that causes more illness, like you said, in the young.
And parents with kids under the age of 12, they're going to have to wait till this winter to vaccinate. Meanwhile, you're vaccinated, but you're coming home to unvaccinated kids. This indirectly spreads the virus in a sense, doesn't it?
Yes. We know the vaccines are tremendously effective at preventing severe disease, preventing symptomatic disease even, but they were never tested on, whether or not you can have a low-level infection and spread it. Now, we think that that's less likely, but it's not zero. So my kids are unvaccinated. They're 8 and 4. So I continue to wear a mask despite being fully vaccinated whenever I go outside of my home because I don't want to bring it home to my unvaccinated
kids.
Yeah,
yeah. That explains that. Okay, Jimmy on the south side. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, how you doing?
Go ahead. Doing great.
I have a question for the doctor. My girlfriend and myself both had COVID, and we both recovered from it, but I went ahead and got vaccinated. She's not going to get vaccinated because she thinks that because she had it before, she's not going to be able to get it again, and she's not a stupid lady. She's very intelligent. I don't understand why, people think that because they caught before, they still don't need to get vaccinated. Or is she right?
Yeah. I believe the advice, Jimmy, is she should get the vaccine. Dr. Cowart?
I agree with Melissa. I know your girlfriend's a very smart lady. And so I would encourage her to look into the recommendation to get vaccinated after having an episode of COVID. It seems that the vaccine induces immunity that lasts longer than catching a case of COVID, particularly if it was a mild case. We know that, unfortunately, those antibodies just don't last as long. So bottom line, even if you had COVID before, we still encourage you to get vaccinated.
Macy in Jacksonville. Hello, Macy. Hi, Macy.
Are you saying?
Go ahead.
How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. My question is, what percentage of the patients that are admitted in the hospital with COVID get vaccinated before they leave?
So you're saying once they leave the hospital, do they accept the vaccine, or are what's the procedure there? Okay. Dr. Cowart, what happens with those patients?
Yeah. So what we recommend to them is that they take a period of about 3 months to heal up and then get vaccinated. It does seem that for a couple of months after having especially a serious case of COVID, that there are some antibodies floating around still. So our current recommendation is once you're discharged from the hospital, that 90 days after you have that case of COVID that landed you in the hospital, that you go get vaccinated at that point. Now, let's say you get hospitalized for something else. You're unvaccinated and you had a foot infection. Okay, I'm going to make this up. My hospital right now, and there may be others doing this also, are starting to offer vaccine to people while they're in the hospital for something unrelated. So your doctor has to review it and say yes or no, we think this person could be vaccinated. If your doctor approves it, then we approach the patient. We ask their permission. If they agree, we go ahead and give them that shot while they're in the hospital. So just like we do for flu shots and Pneumovax shots, we're now offering COVID shots in the hospital in some cases.
Anne on the South Side. Hi, Anne. How are you? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've been vaccinated, but my husband has not. Although his workplace was a vaccination site, he tends to lean, I hate to say this, more as a conspiracy theorist. And I want to know, how can I have a conversation with him given his resistance?
And what is his rationale for not doing it? What is he arguing?
He just says he doesn't trust it.
But no, for no particular reason, just he doesn't trust it.
No particular reason. So I know I'm grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
I do get concerned when I listen to your conversation about families and hospitals, and I'm like, why would you put your family, in that situation when it's preventable?
Right. I'm so glad you called, Anne, because, doctor, there are a lot of families out there like this where they're not on the same page. And parents and children, spouses, brothers and sisters, with one family member begging another family member to do the right thing. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with folks saying that they're begging their elderly parents to get vaccinated and they won't do it because they've been propagandized or they believe conspiracy theories. So, the data is clear on this, Dr. Cowart. Highly vaccinated populations see cases of COVID, hospitalization rates, and deaths from COVID plummet. The more we can get people vaccinated, the more lives we can save. The data on this is overwhelming. So what should Anne tell her husband?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would start by seeing if he has a particular concern that you can address, but he may or may not. I would think, are there any figures that he might listen to, any role models that he looks up to, if there's a religious figure, a priest, a pastor, whom he would listen to, and take their advice, someone else in your life that he trusts a lot to listen to, try to keep the open heart as you're talking to him, but kind of firmly set the boundary, if that makes sense. So you want to hear his concern, but if it's not scientifically legitimate concern to point that out and remind him that COVID itself is very serious. So that's the other thing is I think some people may have a fear, whether it's, rational or irrational, of the vaccine. But I want everybody to remember how we felt a year ago when we were afraid of COVID and to bring that back, because that's what's worrying me right now is COVID is bad. I know that's very simple, but COVID is bad, and I don't want people to get COVID. So, that would be my type approach to something like that, is try to push on all the levers that you have with someone whom obviously you love and care about, and want to see them and your family protected.
Can you quickly mention the COVID town hall that you'll be participating in, Dr. Cowart?
Yes. So a group of us who are with the Doctors Fighting COVID, along with several local elected officials, are planning to host a town hall. We're tentatively looking at Thursday this week, so just a couple days away, and hoping to take your questions at that time, as well as to share stories and success stories of vaccinated people who, you know, are not getting sick. And it looks like we're talking about 5:30 p.m. on Thursday. So stay tuned for that. We'll share that as widely as we can. And it will be on local news channels. The last thing I want to say is, even if you're not vaccinated as of right this second, it may take some time to get that full benefit and full effect. So I would also encourage everybody as you're going around your lives to wear a mask. That includes if you've been vaccinated but you're high risk. I would like for you to also wear a mask so that you don't, you know, get a breakthrough infection. Knowing that you would do well with that breakthrough infection, it's still not good to get sick. If you're like me and you have unvaccinated kids in your home because they're too little to get vaccinated, I'm wearing my mask when I'm out and about. And if you're unvaccinated, while you're talking to your doctor and getting that information, I would strongly encourage you to wear a mask while you're out and about. Anytime you're indoors in a place that isn't your home, I would encourage you to wear that mask. Put it back on.
Great advice. Dr. Jennifer Cowart, hospitalist physician in Jacksonville and part of the group Doctors Fighting COVID. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, folks, start masking up again, please, and go get vaccinated. Later in the hour, author Craig Pittman joins us. But
women have been bearing the brunt of taking care of everybody's emotional and logistical needs during the pandemic.
The special stressors on women in this pandemic and what's behind them. We'll be right back. Well, as we move through this pandemic, many women are seeking to address emotional, physical, and mental issues that are surfacing or made worse by the crisis. Many are finally making it a priority to address long-standing battles with anxiety, depression, eating disorders, stress-related illness, parenting guilt, and on and on and on. Dr. Valerie Rain looks at the underlying cause of all of this stress, anxiety, and exhaustion that women are experiencing in her best-selling book. It's called Patriarchy Stress Disorder. I spoke with her. Dr. Valerie Rain, good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Melissa.
Can you begin by explaining what you mean by the term patriarchy stress disorder? Because I think this is something that speaks to a lot of women. You're naming and labeling something they've kind of felt in their bones for a long time, but how do you define this?
Yes, that's exactly the feedback that I get from women. They have felt it, as you said, in their bones the whole time. It is intergenerational trauma of oppression. Women have been oppressed for thousands of years, and now we have evidence from the field of epigenetics that trauma is genetically transmitted. That is what I have termed patriarchy stress disorder, or PSD.
Okay. And in the pandemic, women have struggled along with men, but now that things are slowly improving, we're seeing, according to all of the numbers in your research, more mental health issues, substance abuse problems, relationship problems. And why do you think women in particular are bearing the brunt of this?
Well, women have been bearing the brunt of taking care of everybody's emotional and logistical needs during the pandemic. We kind of defaulted to what has always been expected of women, taking care of the younger generation and the older generation and everyone around them, their partners. And that activated a lot of trauma. It activated a lot of PSD for women. I have been hearing from women who have been feeling trapped and stuck and so exhausted. And of course, a lot fell on our plate, but that exhaustion also has deeper roots in the nervous system that got so activated, so hyperactivated because of this trauma being triggered. And so our nervous systems have been running hot during the pandemic, and we've had to cope. We've had to cope somehow. There is food, there's alcohol, there is weed, there are streaming shows and online shopping. And I just want to take the shame out of this and feeling bad about yourself for using something to cope, because what we've been coping with is really, really big, and it's not our fault. And it's bigger than any one of us, speaking of intergenerational trauma.
I think that's the message that most people need to take from your book and your research, that this feeling that you have of inadequacy or frustration, that you don't feel like maybe you're doing as well as you should be, that there are systemic things going on that make it harder, and to give yourself a break, right?
Exactly. Exactly. There are systemic things going on that make it harder, absolutely. And our internal wiring has adapted over the course of generations to work with these external barriers. Women have been getting the message that our lives, our time, our bodies are worth less than men's. And that is really the core wound of PTSD. And having been carrying this wound for generations, when we find ourselves feeling bad about ourselves, that is not even our own assessment. These are these trauma adaptations that have adapted to think of ourselves and experience ourselves subconsciously as less than, even if we are consciously very confident and we are competent, we know that we can do things, but that subconscious wiring flares up, even with the most successful women. I quote Meryl Streep in my book, who is talking about her imposter syndrome. She talks about, you know, feeling like nobody wants to see her in another movie, and she doesn't know how to act anyway. And
so even the most successful women, you're saying, can fall victim to this. And so, and particularly for women of color. So then what's your advice to women that want to thrive, not just survive and combat, constantly feel as though they're combating this sort of toxic, draining aspect of our culture, which is that it is a patriarchal culture. It isn't built for us. We've had to figure out how to survive in a culture, in a system that wasn't really built for us.
Exactly. First, recognizing that nothing is wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you. In fact, all these trauma adaptations are very intelligent. They have evolved to help us survive. And these trauma adaptations are along the lines of keeping us playing small, because playing big hasn't been on the menu, really. And if women reached for that, it's been dangerous. Women who played big, women who showed up in their power, were burned at the stake. Bad things happened and continue happening, not to the same degree for the most part. So our nervous systems know that we need to either hold back, or if we are playing big and stepping in our power, sometimes our nervous system robs us of experiencing the fruits of our hard work, the fruits of our success, enjoying our success, because it has a hard time relaxing, again, because we don't feel safe. So recognizing this is step number one. There's nothing wrong with you. And step number two would be to seek to establish that safety. There are a number of tools that I share in the book that have to do with rewiring the nervous system so that it can learn that experiences such as public speaking your mind, or showing up authentically in any situation is safe. And it can only learn it through, not through words, because our subconscious doesn't speak, or rather these centers that are activating fight, flight, freeze response in our system, they don't speak the language of the words. So in order for us to rewire that survival programming, we need to have experiences that help us feel safe. There are some starter tools in the book, and there are some tools that I also share on my website that anyone can download and just get started on this journey. It is not a mental exercise. Understanding is very helpful, but ultimately it is about rewiring the nervous system and the subconscious. There is this research tidbit that I share in the book that is literally mind-blowing, and it has to do with our actions being decided in our subconscious. That's what neuroscientists have found, that our actions are decided in our subconscious. So working with our subconscious, rewiring it to feel safe in our success, in our happiness, in our well-being, in self-care, everything that we desire, that is the work that sets the foundation for thriving.
Which is what we all want. So I recommend this book, Patriarchy Stress Disorder by Dr. Valerie Rain. Check out her website, too, at drvalerie.com. This is great stuff, and I really appreciate you being with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Melissa.
Today's segment of Going Green is sponsored in part by North Florida Land Trust.
Well, volunteers from across town are working to transform an estimated 1.2 million flowers into components for a new exhibition at the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens. It's opening up at the end of the month. We're spotlighting it in our Going Green today as we welcome Kim Kudadring, the Kummer's Director of Education. She's on the phone. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. And I'm curious to hear about this. Of course, the Kummer Museum is known for its art, but also its beautiful gardens. So what's happening?
So I'm so glad you mentioned the historic gardens. This site-specific installation, which will be indoors, is the perfect connection to the outdoors. This is by artist Rebecca Louise Law, who's a British artist. She uses specifically dried and fresh plant materials for her work. So while some artists work in paints, which Rebecca used to do, others might work in clay, Rebecca actually uses flowers. And so she's creating three-dimensional immersive exhibitions. The one she's developing and working on with volunteers is specific to the Kummer Museum of Art and Gardens. It's going to include flowers that she has gathered from all over the world with past exhibitions. So all of those flowers from previous places are coming to the museum. They're there now, as well as incorporating fresh flowers that our volunteers from the community are working on to create these amazing garlands that will eventually become part of the exhibition.
Wow, this sounds beautiful. And there's a theme of sustainability in this new exhibit, correct?
Correct. Rebecca and the museum, generally, we're very interested in the relationship that we have with nature. And Rebecca is very curious and wanting to invite people to be fully immersed in a natural experience, not necessarily outdoors, but with using actual natural materials. It really helps us immerse ourselves in a different way because it's so surprising and shocking. And it really invites visitors to explore and reflect on their own relationship between humanity and nature. And I was listening to your previous guest as well. It's also an opportunity for that pausing, that reflecting, that self-care, and that really tuning into ourselves through this immersive experience. So I think visitors are going to find it really exciting and invigorating, and many will also find it very calming and peaceful, and a further entry into exploring the historic riverfront gardens behind the Kummer Museum.
Now, I hear that so many people want to volunteer to create these garlands that you don't need any more volunteers. Is that right?
Correct. That's correct. We had a resounding positive response from the community. So these are people who have been longtime friends of the museum, people who not necessarily visited the museum before. We had school students from Jacksonville Arts and Music School yesterday. It's fabulous. And we're wrapping up the volunteer effort this week in order to be able to open the exhibition next week. And so we're really excited about the community effort and that this is really a collaborative community-built exhibition. And if volunteers or people are interested in other volunteer opportunities, they're certainly welcome to visit the museum, talk with us, look at the website, and see what they might be interested in.
All right. Now, this exhibit doesn't open until the end of the month, so people need to mark their calendars to come check it out. Tell us when they can come enjoy. Yeah.
They should definitely mark their calendars. We have a couple of special opening opportunities, which we typically have for some donors. And then anyone who's a member of the museum should definitely mark their calendar for the day before the exhibition opens to the public. The exhibition will open on Friday, July 30th. That also happens to coincide with our summer at the Comer. So that's a really nice opportunity to both experience the exhibition as well as the fun, lively atmosphere from Friday evenings.
And when people come to see this exhibit called The Journey, they should, if you've never been to the museum before, just check everything out there because it really is a cultural jewel here in Jacksonville.
It really is. So this is Rebecca's exhibition is very contemporary. She wants it to be fully immersive. She's asking folks not to take photos, just to be in the exhibition. And then when visitors exit through our pop-up shop and they can look at some merchandise and interact with some other experiences, we invite visitors to explore the entire museum. We are a survey museum, so we have ancient artworks all the way through modern and contemporary works, in addition to our living collection, which are the historic riverfront gardens out back of the museum. We kind of call it our backyard. So there's so much for visitors to see and do. I think The Journey is a great place to start, and we hope that they continue their journey through the entire museum campus.
So come on out to the Comer when The Journey exhibit opens July 30th using all flowers and natural materials. It sounds magical. Kim Kudadring, Director of Education at the Comer Museum of Art and Gardens, on the line. I look forward to seeing it, Kim. Thanks.
Wonderful. We look forward to seeing you. Thank you so much.
And in a moment, a conversation with investigative journalist and New York Times bestselling author Craig Pittman. He is chronicling the wildest stories this state has to offer. We'll take a look inside his new book, The State You're In, right after this.
Hi, I'm Chris Boyd, host of Think. Think is a show for curious minds. Whether we're discussing history, science, politics, or the arts, my hope is that every conversation inspires curiosity and complexity, and that every listener walks away with their own questions, inspiration, and a thirst for more knowledge. Tune in and join me as we learn something new and take a moment to think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Robin Young. Survivors of Canada's boarding schools for forced assimilation of Indigenous kids testify about the horrors children saw in the church-run schools.
Many of our children who ran away during the winter froze to death.
We'll speak with the chief of Canada's 634 First Nations next time, here and now.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the reporter who's digging reopened the Jeffrey Epstein case. Long after Epstein had gotten off with lenient treatment following a sex trafficking probe, Julie K. Brown tracked down dozens of his victims. Her stories led to his arrest on new federal charges. He later died by suicide in prison. Brown's new book is called Perversion of Justice. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The BBC dubbed Ya Jessie's debut novel one of the 100 English-language novels that shaped our world. Her follow-up is a powerful story about a Ghanaian family in Alabama, the state she moved to when she was 9. Now it's been shortlisted for this year's Women's Prize for Fiction, one of the most prestigious literary awards in the UK. Ya Jessie joins us next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, for decades, investigative journalist and New York Times bestselling author Craig Pittman has chronicled the wildest stories Florida has to offer. He's got a folksy style, an eye for the absurd, and a passion for the history and environment of his home state. In his new book, The State You're In, Pittman has put together a selection of columns that have appeared throughout his career, highlighting the weirdness and sometimes wonder of Florida. I spoke to him about this book and this state we all call home. Take a listen. Hey, Craig. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Always happy to talk to you.
It's great to see you're out with a new book, and anyone who has a connection to Florida needs to pick up The State You're In, because you're such a great chronicler of this crazy place that we call home. You've got some new stories in this book, some of the most insane Florida tales imaginable. Tell us how you pulled this all together.
Well, after Oh Florida came out in 2016 and hit the New York Times bestseller list, people kept asking me, when are you going to do a sequel? Oh, you need to do a sequel. And I kept thinking, well, you know, that would be nice, but I think I covered all the subjects I needed to cover in that. But, you know, Florida is a place that produces lots and lots of great stories, as you well know.
Yeah, we can never run out, basically.
No. Somebody said it's the grist that keeps on giving. And so I thought, well, what if I took, what if I put out a collection of some of the stories and columns that I've written over the past 30 years? And put that out in book form, and maybe that would answer the demand for an O Florida sequel without having to actually be an O Florida sequel. So I talked to the folks at the University Press of Florida, and they said, "Yeah, let's do that."
Yeah.
So a lot of them ran in the St. Pete Times or Tampa Bay Times while I was working there for 30 years, but there are also pieces in there from Sarasota Magazine. There's a piece. Several pieces that ran in Crime Reads about Florida writers who wrote about different subjects, John D. McDonald being one of them. It's just sort of a give people a flavor of what Florida is like, and cover, I tried to cover a wide variety of topics from a piece on Florida's mermaid industry to a story about a guy spending time on death row.
Yeah, it covers the gamut, and you really do have this eye for the absurd, but you also really know the state, you know its history, you know its unique environment. So this book, I think, is a great gift for the Florida friend or relative in your life, because you kind of capture the complexities of living here with these columns that you've written over the years.
Well, that was my hope is, you know, people, and this is sort of the thesis I put forward in O Florida, too. People have this image, particularly people outside Florida, have this image of us as, you know, the punchline state. You know, oh, you guys are so crazy and wacky. Well, yeah, a lot of that craziness, you know, that reputation we have is deserved. But also there's a lot of serious stuff going on here and important stuff, and some stories that are just plain interesting. You know, the one on the fastest gopher tortoise in Florida, I just had a lot of fun writing that one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the story on the fugitive con man who was being chased by a bail bondsman, and the guy convinced his girlfriend that the bail bondsman was actually a mafia hitman who was after him. That's just a great story. Mm-hmm. about a Florida guy.
Yeah. And I wanted to say, you know, as I hear you sharing all of these anecdotes with a smile, we need to laugh about living here, because let's face it, living here lately hasn't always been a barrel of laughs.
No. And I mean, you know, Florida is constantly trying to kill us. I mean, that's
exactly
a basic rule of life here, and we get reminded of that every year with hurricane season. But you know, we also have a lot of great benefits in living here. You know, we've got world class beaches. We've got cotton candy sunsets that we can see, and we've got the state park system that's won 4 national awards, which is more than any other state. And, of course, we have the world's best police log items. So,
and then there's always Florida Man, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Not a day goes by that Florida Man doesn't somehow make the news.
Exactly. I put out a weekly newsletter, author newsletter, called Oh Florida, the Newsletter. And every week I count down the top 5 Oh Florida stories. And I usually have a really hard time picking out just 5. To include from the past week.
Exactly right. And, you know, for relatives and friends that live in other states, they just sort of talk to us as though we're living in another country, which sometimes it feels like we are. So if you want to laugh about it, I highly recommend picking up Craig's new book. It's called The State You're In, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife, coming out in hardcover in September. Pre-order it now. It's a great new read by investigative journalist and New York Times bestselling author Craig Pittman, chronicling the wildest tales Florida has to offer. Always great to hear your voice, and congrats on the new book. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you so much. I think it turned out well, although I wish they'd found someone more handsome to be the cover model.
Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
And thanks for listening. And also thanks to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. Go get the vaccine, everybody, and mask up. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Stay safe. Have a good day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.